Hey, I'm Daniel Colburn.
And I'm Caleb Porzio.
Welcome to 20% Time, where two coworkers discuss one programming topic every Friday for less than 20 minutes.
Oh, his name was Muna.
Muna.
Okay.
All right, podcast.
Podcast.
So it is. It's been a week of transitions. Everyone has transitioned. You have transitioned from microservice land to greenfield land.
Yeah.
I have transitioned from greenfield land to microservice land.
Hmm.
I have transitioned to using Vim for everything as an exercise.
Wow.
You have transitioned from using a bad Vim mode plugin for VS Code to using a good Vim mode plugin for VS Code.
True. So true.
And we have both transitioned from being in Texas to being where we live.
Also true.
Big week.
Big week.
Big week.
Totally. So we rotated and now I'm frolicking in the greenfield.
Mm.
I get to touch a database with my bare hands.
You get to do Eloquent.
I do whatever I want to do.
But mostly Eloquent,
right? I use Eloquent. I write migrations. You should see me. I wrote a mailable today.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Why'd you do it?
With Markdown. Markdown mailables.
A markdownmailables.org.
Yeah. Huh. And it felt, oh, so good.
That does sound good.
I used CodeShip.
Really?
I spun up CodeShip. Why do you hate CodeShip?
It's slow and bad.
Really?
Yeah, it's slow and bad.
Why is it slow and bad?
I don't know. I mean, probably bad programming, but I don't know.
Why is it bad?
Because it's slow.
Okay, so you should just say it's slow.
And that makes it bad.
I don't know why it's slow.
That's actually not the only reason.
Have you like benchmarked it, or you just had a slow app that against
Travis,
other?
I ran Travis and CodeShip on Ziggy, and Travis finished in like half the time that CodeShip did.
Ziggy must take 1 second flat to build.
That is not true.
How does it take longer
to build?
Than 1 second?
No, but to run, because I've got a lot of JavaScript tests and all this other nonsense.
Really?
And it uses Orchestra Test Bench, so it spins up like a whole layer of a lap for each test.
Still, that's crazy to me that it takes more than, I don't know, 10 seconds.
It does stuff.
That's something.
I don't even recognize Ziggy anymore, dude. Ziggy has become something. Like, I need a massive rewrite of Ziggy.
Do it.
Not even like a massive rewrite. I really just need to like, there's too many pieces of logic that don't have names. And it makes it very hard to work on. Because people who I love, the community, you know?
Yeah.
The community got in there and pull requested things, and each individual pull request was like, oh, I'm just going to add this one line to fix this bug, and then we're good.
Yeah.
So I would be like, yeah, merge. So I merged all these pull requests, and then like death by a thousand cuts.
Death by a thousand merges. Yep.
Now I have all of these methods that like are so big and do so many different things. And like there's these regexes that like don't have comments with them. And so they do something like they, and you know, cause like my whole thing is like string text replacement, you know, that's what Ziggy does.
Yeah. Right.
So there's like six different regexes in the app.
Oh.
And you know, one of them is like, get the tags out of the URL. The other one's like match the HTTP or HTTPS status of the thing. The other is like, figure out if there's a port appended to the URL, you know?
Yeah.
There's all these URL regexes and like, no one commented them with like an example.
Can't you
of like,
just
this
put, like pop them into
this.
Separate methods with like nice names, call it a day?
Yeah, so that's part of the massive rewrite, right? Is like pop those methods into nice. But first, I feel like
so
I
sounds
need
like
to
the like, massive rewrite might look more like six refactoring six things into new methods in one
it's
file.
Not just that. That's just an example of the symptomatic issue. It's a symptom of the issue, right? Uh-huh, which is like, I need probably 20 new methods,
right?
And that's a lot. It feels like a lot.
Do you, when you merge a pull request, is there a world where you merge a pull request and don't, you know, touch it locally? Like, you just hit merge.
Documentation.
Okay, documentation, right. But anything else, you pull it down locally and test it and, like, play with it?
Uh-huh.
Because with better PHP unit, like, when somebody, like, I don't know, you know, it's that ownership thing. Like, if I don't, as soon as I lose ownership of the code, it's all over for me.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And I think that's probably what you're feeling, right? Like, it's this, so what I was pretty intentional about doing, and I don't know, better PHP unit's not a huge project, but I guess I try to do this in anything that, like, be very willing, like I think I wrote a tweet about this. Like, open up the code editor, open up your editor, open up the PR, merge the PR, and then, like, have it all open and in your understanding and manipulate it. You know, like, be willing to commit on top of something somebody pulled in, you know? I mean, this is obvious, but
it's just... It is obvious. It's just, you know, not always happening.
But okay, so my new response to you is I feel your pain. I feel it.
Yeah.
When I'm in charge of code that I don't own in my brain, it just, everything breaks.
It's the worst, yeah.
It's terrible.
So, yeah, and that's the thing is, like, I don't even know if this code needs a massive rewrite, but I need to have massively rewritten it because I need to get 100% familiar with what everything does again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, like, some of it's just code that I wrote that was, like, real smart at the time and I should have written a comment.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I just didn't. That's the issue. Strings are dangerous, dude. Strings are so dangerous because strings let you do... You can do so much clever stuff with strings.
Yeah.
You can get so cute
with
them.
Right.
And you start getting cute and you're like, I bet I could make that a one-liner. You know? And then as soon as you start getting cute with strings, like, your code just goes bananas unreadable.
Yeah.
I have this... Let's just talk about this one method and then we'll stop talking about Ziggy. I have a method called normalize params.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is, so Ziggy, like the Laravel route helper, allows you to pass in either an array of things, which will just get applied in order to the empty params.
Right.
Or an object
where
things will be applied by keys.
Yep.
Right? So you can say, like, post colon one, you know, author colon three or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or
just a value.
Or an object, which is basically like the entire object, and then it'll look for an ID in that and pull it out. And so you can also pass in an array of those objects. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's like four different ways that people can pass params into this function.
Yep.
And so I have this method called normalize params that basically, like, figures out which one you did and then, like, puts them into, like, a standard pattern so that we can loop through them later.
Yeah.
That method is wacky because I got smart and I did this whole, like, cute one-liner ternary where I, like, used some object property to determine, like, what type of params you passed in and then, like, either wrapped it in an array or didn't, depending on whatever. It was crazy. And so recently someone made me aware that, like, one of those four things didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to, like, go in and, like, look at that normalized params method again. And I was like, man, for a 2 or 3 line method, this is insane. Like it was just so hard to follow the thread. And I feel like I should have just written comments, especially because it's open source. Write comments in open source is the moral of the story. A, because someone else is going to be working on your code and it'd be nice for them to be able to read the code. And B, because someone else is going to change your code and it would be nice for you to remember what it used to do.
Yep.
That's all.
Spoken truly.
Spoken like a like first time maintainer of an actually used project. So you had something you wanted to run by me. I don't remember what it was, though.
Yeah, so here is... there's been a couple fun things. There's lots of tiny little fun things that I would love to go on and on about, but there's been a couple, like, bigger fun things. Like, problems I've had to solve and wanted to really just give it time and do it the right way, TM. But yep.
Solitude.
One of them was on my side project, and I did some brainstorming with Keith Damiani, and it went really well, and we came...
What a gem.
Seriously. Yeah, that dude. And yeah, so we came away with a pretty baller approach that would be fun to talk about, but we don't have to. What I think I want to talk about... okay. Yeah. So what I just realized that I just said this whole thing that means nothing to anybody listening. I'm so sorry for that. Did you? But maybe I'm just setting the stage. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the thing I want to talk about, let's get serious here. Onboarding a user. Here's the flow. You have an app. There's a sign up step process, right? Yes. You password list sign up initially. You put in your email, and then you start the series of sign up steps, like put in the this and the that and the this and the that. And let's say you even get to payment, and then you finish, and then you put in your password, and everything is written in stone. You're now a first class user in the app. You have a dashboard. You're
right, but everything's just like in memory until then.
Yeah, so is it? Right. That's the first question. That's that. As soon as we were talking about this project, that's where my head went initially, is like, ooh, wizards. Every time I build a wizard, I feel like I do whatever kind of works for me at the time,
yep.
And I'm never happy with it. I've sure. done, like, actually the first Laravel app I worked on, the first, like, one that people used, was pretty much a big wizard. And I did this thing where, like, I took the data from one step and I just kind of, like, I kept handing it off to the next step, you know, in the controller methods. And it just gets out of hand, you know? You're, like, bundling up all this data as you go. It's like you're snowballing data through this wizard, request to request. You have to persist that date. Like, I was using sessions, so I'd have to, like, pull the current session, merge it into the session, you know, push it into, like, the flashes, all this stuff. It was really dumb. It was my first Laravel app.
Then so are you going to then make a temp users table that you just delete on a cron?
Yeah, so that's kind of where my head's going. The other way I've made wizards in the past is just straight up front end, all front end, which is really nice when you can do that. But, you know, there's trade-offs there as well.
Right, you would have to use Ajax.
You'd have to use Ajax, right. And
and that's good, and you should do that.
And Daniel saw it, and it was good. I've you know, now that I'm the non Ajax view heavy guy, I can't just go making a Vue wizard, you know, that would just be wrong. I did explore it though, and I did Google like Vue wizard things, and there is a Vue wizard component thing that you can define steps and everything, but I don't know. Sounds I just great. Wasn't into it. So I guess it doesn't even really matter what the implementation is like. But yeah, so what I'm doing right now, I'm doing like all the PRs so far are just so MVP. I have one table in the whole app, and it's called users, and I'm throwing everything in there until I figure out something I'm happy with. But yeah, so there's this concept of like kind of temporary data, like this user, this email address is kind of spoken for and has this data that's been, I don't know, stored along with it during the application process or the sign up setup process, right? So I guess a couple questions, couple things that I have to think about is, one, what do you do? Do you have, and I pretty much have settled this one for me, but I'll let you say what you want to say before I tell you that I thought that or not. But that one's pretty much settled for me. Like, how do you store the data? Like, obviously I don't want it on the user's table. I shouldn't say that. We should leave that open as an option where you just, every time the user puts in more data, you store it on the table and you have some flag that says like, is finished or not, is signed up, you know?
I don't like that.
But that's an option. We should talk about why that's not good. Maybe let's go down that road.
Okay.
Why is that not good?
So there's lots of reasons I don't like it. One is that I'm never going to be able to do user all ever confidently.
Okay. Right. What if
unless
you do,
you can global do a global scope,
or you could do PTI or SCI, single table inheritance.
I was like PTI.
You lock that user class up, protect that user method or user class,
like,
and then you have a guest or onboarding user and a real user. You know.
Yeah. So just make a table called onboarding user. The STI thing actually makes it better.
The STI thing is pretty sweet, huh? You could have the user class with a global scope.
That's actually kind of cute.
I know. That's like the first thing I started writing down. I was like, ooh, this is good.
Oh, I kind of like the STI. I was all ready to fight you and stuff, but like, I think the STI thing might be the best thing.
So where does this break down? This breaks down, let's say there is, so one area this breaks down.
So it's called temp user. It's not called onboarding user. Let's call it temp user, because that indicates that they're going to get cleared.
Yeah, they might not get cleared, though.
They should get cleared.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because, okay, so I'm Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
I'd like to sign up for a fancy finance man application to manage my finances.
How to become secure for your financial future. That's my Dave Ramsey impression.
Yep. I'm doing better than I deserve.
Yeah, great.
I want to take my my email address and put it into the sign-up form, right?
Yeah.
And then it creates an onboarding user element, or an onboarding user object for me, and stores it in the database, and then I go away for 6 months, and I come back, and I want to sign up for this new app I just discovered called Fancy Finance Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Which happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And then I put in my email address, and it says, this email address is spoken for.
Oh, sir, I left out a missing piece. Email deep linking.
Can you,
so you put
explain
in
those words to me?
you put in your email address to start the sign-up process again, and then it says, hey, it looks like you've already started this before. Check your email account for a link. And then the email, so there's like a whole token thing that goes on, you know.
Uh-huh.
You're basically passwordless authenticating the user via email and a deep link.
And like, you're just authenticating them to continue signing up.
Exactly.
That's all that an onboarding user can do.
Yep.
That's cool.
Righto. Yeah. So that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think we're there.
All right, done. I guess a couple things with this. I'm sure there's more problems, but one thing is our MVP admin dashboard for this app is SQL Pro. And so this is actually, stepping back, this is kind of a way that I used to think that I try not to think, and I think less like now. I used to think very like...
Wait. Try that sentence again.
Really?
This is a way that I used to think that I try not to think, and I think less so now?
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Nailed it. Is it not perfectly clear?
No, it's like the least clear sentence you've said this year.
Oh, I used to...
You said think three times in three different ways in that sentence, and I'm not sure what they mean.
My brain used to be in this space, and now it's not. Now I try not to be in that space, but I'm sometimes pulled towards that old bad
And the space, space. Is the managing apps with SQL Pro?
No. The space is purity. Data purity. Like, you know, when you first read about the normal forms and you're like, oh, everything must be dry. I must follow the normal forms. Everything in my application must be, you know, and that leads you down that road of we've talked about this, like computed things, like derived properties and things.
Yep.
Like you have the data represented in one place. And then, so the actual thing is like, your life is probably way better if there's a cron job that like populates a statistic in a separate table and you can pull it instantaneously and whatnot, right?
Sure.
But instead, that's not like, that's too like iffy for you. There's too many moving parts, and you'd rather have this pure, like canonical data source, and then everything is derived from that thing. And you end up with a app that is slow and crawling and has, I guess the biggest thing is, okay, the two things are slow and things aren't represented in the data, you know, like concepts. You feel like the data isn't the place to represent a concept, you know, it's the place to like store the stuff in its most like atomic form, I guess, you know, in its true identity. So anyway,
do we
need to resurface? Take
a quick sidebar.
Yeah.
And talk about what you mean when you use the word atomic, because you use it a lot recently.
Okay.
It's
one of those words right now that I'm hot on and I'm probably misusing half the time. But
well,
it's like,
I don't think it's that, but it's like, I learned the word atomic as it relates to programming from like Brad Frost and like atomic design.
Same.
Okay. So that is what I think of when I think of atomic. Is that what you mean when you say atomic?
I mean, when I say atomic, I mean, it's smallest unit.
Uh huh.
Yeah. I mean, a small thing that has its own identity, I guess.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Carry on. Data in its most atomic form.
Is that on?
That works for me.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Just wanted to clarify. It was a quick sidebar.
Yeah, no, it's a good sidebar. So, yeah, so I used to think this way of like data purity, and it would lead me down all these roads. And then I started embracing things like when you create something, if you're going to end up computing a value and it's going to take like, I don't know, a bunch of memory or break down or not scale or whatever, I don't know, whatever, put it in the database and it's super fast. And then you don't have to worry about, I'm not representing the idea well enough. I don't like have all the pain points like offhand ready to go. But do you feel me? You feel what I'm saying here?
Yeah, a little bit.
You get me? Okay. Mm-hmm. So bringing it back to my, to this conversation we're having about onboarding users. So if we do it this way with the users table, right? The thing that you initially said was bad, but then we figured out it's okay and cool with STI. The thing with that is, how are you storing the data? Like as you go along, what are you storing it in the user table? And for me, it would be like their user properties. I'll store them in here. And then I need to derive the state of the user somewhere. I need to know what step the user's at, right?
Yeah, no, this is how you do it, right?
Okay.
You could either make everything nullable or you could give everything a default value.
Everything nullable or give everything a default. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the way you check is what has been filled out, right? And the most important thing is that you leave password nullable.
Yeah.
And then, you know, is complete, or the thing that determines the STI division is whether or not it has a password.
Right. So that's the thing.
So you don't have to add a is complete flag.
I'm advocating for adding an is complete flag.
Don't do that.
I'm advocating for that. This is my point.
You have an is complete flag. It's called a password.
Right. No, but it's not. That's called a password.
No.
So then you have to represent that idea in your app.
Yep.
Right.
Which you should do.
I don't think so.
Why not?
I think you can do it and it's fine, mm-hmm. but then it's so easy to change and you have to manage that concept. Like,
what do you mean it's so easy to change?
You have to manage the concept in the runtime. That's the difference. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine there's really good trade-offs on both sides and I'd love to like
What's wrong with managing at the runtime?
Okay. Like I said, the most practical point, which definitely doesn't apply to most scenarios, but the most practical point is our interface is SQL Pro. So if we hand off a SQL Pro to a client, and they this is their admin panel, they don't know that password is how you like make a user. You know what I'm saying? The thing is like password means something else. You know that's that different way of thinking. It's like, I want to be able to look at my database right now at this current moment. I want to be able to look at my database and see the big concepts, you know, assuming there's no big like data storage cost or table search speed cost, you know, like I want to be able to see the big concepts. They're easy little flags. I can toggle them on and off very easily. I imagine it would make my life much easier at runtime. I really do.
Yeah, so the fact that you're going to basically be having untrained people in your database using that as an admin panel is weird. I thought it was just you using the admin panel. I thought this was your side project.
No, this one's not the side project.
Okay,
this is the greenfield I'm frolicking in.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, that makes it a little bit different and maybe ill-advised, but also, like, what is...
Ill-advised. Mm. How dare you?
Mm, yeah, I think you can't use SDI then.
Why not?
I think if you're going to have users in your user table.
Yeah.
Right? Or if you're going to have like users interacting with your user table.
Yeah.
Then you should just have it be users.
If I'm going to have users interacting with the users table.
If you're going to have administrators
I table. I agree. I mean, I still think I'm going to have to create these temporary users as actual users in the users table, right? Or are you suggesting that I should totally divorce it from the users table?
You should divorce it from the users table.
Really?
Yeah.
But then I lose all the leveraging I get out of like auth user, you know?
Yeah, well, you have to decide what's more important, right? Is it writing good code or is it having people use your SQL Pro
dashboard? Is it writing good code?
Because, well, that's the thing, is like, you know, using the password as the flag is clearly the better code.
I don't think so.
Yeah, well, you're wrong about that. But okay. And this is why I needed to make this argument, right? It's like I had to push you into the position where you no longer used, I'm going to have administrators in my SQL Pro as the justification for why this was good code.
All right, forget about SQL Pro.
If it's good code, then it's good code. if it's like an externality about administrators, then, you know,
yeah.
we have to consider that externality as the primary source of truth, and we then have to say that you can't use STI anymore.
Right. Okay. I'm going to launch an attack on that stance.
I would love that. That was what I was setting you up for. I love when we do this. I gave you a little alley-oop there. Did you feel it?
I felt it.
Come on. Come at me.
Okay. Couple points. These are mostly going to be practical because I don't know if I can get my head in a different space. Factories. You have...
Oh, we're...
I probably blew up. I think I just peaked on that
laugh. 20% time right here.
Oh, factories. Yeah, somebody inside of Titan is carrying the torch on factory stories.
Are they?
They are. Keep your eye out. There's going to be something. Am I allowed to say? I'm allowed to say, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Our dear friend, John Bonacorsi.
John Bonacorsi?
Yep.
That was the first thing he ever did at Titan.
Yes, it is. You're right.
He showed up at on-site, and we had like
on his first day. This is his first day was at on-site in Chicago.
His first day at Titan, he came to on-site in Chicago. He walked into a big Airbnb, and me and Caleb are like airplaying to a giant TV and arguing about factory stories.
Yep, we're like we got our sleeves rolled up. We're making it happen. He jumped right in.
He jumped right in.
He even drove.
I think there's a picture of it that exists.
Yeah.
Of us and Jose, and Jose has his arms crossed, looking all wise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was a good time.
That was a great time. So
John Bon imprinted on factory stories.
Right. Jeff Ocho?
Ocho.
He carried the baton for a while, right?
Yes.
He has a package out there on factory stories. And so I guess old man Adam Wathen, in his test-driven... Laravel course uses a similar thing to manage them, which is interesting. I didn't know. And John Bon is doing a similar thing that he's been doing on his own project. And so he's...
So it's like the task manager of test-driven development. Everyone builds one.
The task manager of... Oh, right, right. Yeah, yes. Yes, it's a to-do app. Yeah, of TDD, right. So I hope I didn't give away information that John Bon wouldn't want me to give away, but he is going to be dropping a sick blog post, and I was looking at some of the code today, and...
Is it sick?
It's a problem. It's a problem that, like, to be truly solved will need to be Laravel core, and it'll have to be some awesome way that nobody can think of right now, but until then, it's good.
See, I bet someone out there who has a healthy developer-sized ego just heard you say that and started writing a PR.
I am so sorry to John Bon. But
someone
it's for
was
the greater
like,
good. So, yeah,
someone was
like,
oh, you think it can't be solved right now? You think no one can conceive of it? You super smart Caleb Porzio?
No, I think...
Don't worry.
I think I can't conceive of it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's
going to
be one of these 16-year-old kids.
To see it conceived.
Like Miguel, what's his name? Or Wilbur. One of those guys.
Wilbur Powerly. Powery?
Uh-huh.
Powery?
I don't actually know if he's 16, but I think he's pretty young.
Smart guys, for
sure.
Smart
fellas.
Yep. All right, so here's my attack. User factory, right?
Yes.
Let's say you have a concept in your app called... What are we calling this concept of the user being like signed up or not? Like truly signed up, non-temporary?
Onboarding user is fine.
No, like what? Not the state of the user. Okay, so like user arrow what? User arrow is onboarding? Yeah, that's fine, right?
Wait, no, but you shouldn't have to do that if you're doing STI, right?
Oh, are we back in STI?
I thought you brought us back to STI.
Can we forget about STI for a second?
Okay.
It might still apply to that.
Okay, sure.
It probably will still apply to that, I think. Yeah.
Carry on.
Let's just forget
I'll allow
it.
Yeah, I'll allow it.
Right. So let's say user is onboarding. There's a method called is onboarding, right?
Yes.
Or a computed attribute, get, right? Get is onboarding attribute.
Sure.
Okay. So you're pretending that it's on your database table, but it's not, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So when you create a factory, user factory, what do you do about is onboarding? When you are defining the factory, if you want to initially set a different, right, you'd have to make a state. You'd have to make a factory state that says...
Which is like literally what factory states are made for. So can I help you with
your
argument?
So you get to lose a factory state.
No, can I help you with your argument, though?
Okay, do it, yeah.
Forget about is onboarding, right? Which is the distinction between like onboarding and not onboarding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's say within onboarding user,
mm-hmm.
let's say, you know, is on step one, is on step two, is on step three.
Right, yeah.
Okay,
yep.
Right? And that's like has filled out email address and phone number, has filled out email address, phone number, and mailing address.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's those three steps,
mm-hmm.
right? And to me, has filled out password is just a fourth step.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens that there's an STI line drawn between steps three and four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? But you're still going to need factory states for all those three initial steps.
Right.
So why not just have a factory state for the fourth
right.
one?
You could, but you could avoid all the factory states. Here's the big dilemma. The big dilemma is, I think I had another good attack that I forgot, but we run the risk of moving beyond that initial argument that I want to have. But the deal is, there are two ways to do this in my head right now. There is the explicit database level on step one, on step two, on step three, right? And then there's the computed, is this person on step one, on step two, that gets decided at runtime, however yes. you decide which step they're on, right?
Right.
This is the question I want to answer right here with you.
Yeah, computed. It's better.
We got to figure it out. So there's pro cons. Let's start with the problem of, and this one may quickly go in your favor, but we'll see. Start with the problem of, let's say, here's the story. We have those steps mm-hmm. we talked about. User enters email, then user enters, I don't know, street they live on, user enters whatever. Let's say email, street, favorite, color, and then password. Okay.
Sure.
Those are the four steps, or one, two, three, yeah, four. And, okay, so let's say that we store them as that they're computed, okay?
Yes.
And there's a field for each one of those things. And there's probably multiple fields, whatever, for uh-huh. each of those steps. And you compute them. All right. Now we want to add a step, or we want to add a piece of data to a step.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So let's say a user is halfway through, and now there's a new feature request, and somebody says... And so the feature man says, we need to add another piece of information onto the address. We need to support address line 2 or something. Yes. Or some piece of data that's not optional for users retroactively, you know?
Yes.
So option A, do we kick everybody off of the onboarding process and force everybody to restart when that feature's added? That's option A. That's like...
Why?
Because that'll do what we need to do, right? Do we... Like, what if your brain is going somewhere, tell me about it.
No, mine. I feel like your brain is going somewhere.
Okay, I'll keep going. That's option A, because this is where it kind of breaks down for me in my understanding of it. And I feel like there's something in the air, like I'm headed towards some, like, immutability thing, where, like, each step is defined in its own thing, and it's immutable, and you cannot modify a step. You have to replace it with a new step, you know? Mm-hmm.
Just so we're clear, I only think immutability is a moral good in a few contexts, and this is not one of them.
Okay. Okay.
I think because immutability gets thrown around as like the value of like component driven front end frameworks, you know?
Okay.
I think like immutability has like entered the mind as like, oh, one of the moral goods. It's solid TM, it's immutable TM.
Yeah, I think that it's more than just that stuff. There's the whole event sourcing drive, you know, where like events are immutable. Like you can't change events. You have to, you know, modify or event.
I'm fine with all of it. Right. But like, just like in this context, like, I think this is a perfect example of a place where it's like, it's immutable. Doesn't like it's immutable. Isn't a justification for doing it.
It could be though. I think I can't see it perfectly well. But we need to, I guess, get like pin down a couple different potential architectures for this. Let's say there's architecture A. That's you have a users table, you have a bunch of data fields in the users table, and you decide what step the user is on at runtime
based on which data fields are filled out
or meet some X criteria, right?
Right.
Okay. Architecture B. You have all the same data, and then you have a let's say you have an extra field on the users table called last completed step. Okay. That's architecture B. Architecture C is you have a totally separate table called steps or something, mm-hmm. you know?
And then you have relationships and it's super weird.
Or you have a bunch of different tables, like step uh-huh. one table, step two table, step
That's
three table.
That's fun.
Right, but I'm throwing it out there.
Okay. So the only two that I'm really considering are the first two.
Okay.
Those are the only two that I think are even worth considering.
Okay.
The only other one that was worth considering is the you have a users table and an incomplete users table.
Okay, right.
And, you know.
But then you have the same problem, because even with the incomplete, I mean, the only difference sure, with sure. those two. Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, so that's why SDI is better. So then the first two are the only ones that I would care about, right? Is like you should compute what step they're on based on what data is filled out, or you can have an int field that tells you what step they're on numerically.
Yeah, let's go with that. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So in scenario A, mm-hmm. where there are all these fields, you have, and feature man says, add a new field to this step. Feature so man. You pull request. I'm picturing this guy in a suit. Like, what's that?
This is the guy.
There's like Horton Hears a Who or one of those.
Okay, or like, yeah, carry on.
There's they call it something uh-huh. funny, I think.
Yeah,
and it's, okay.
Boil that dust back.
Okay, anyway. I'm on Horton Hears a Who now.
No, you're good. So feature man comes in and he wants to add a step.
He wants to add a step, right. Add a field to one of the steps.
So he wants to add a field to one of the
so
steps.
So your pull request uh-huh. is a migration that adds a field.
Uh-huh.
The code that decides which step the user is on, let's say there's a current step method for uh-huh. the user, right? And it does the thing. You pull request in the logic.
You don't even need to do that.
Why not?
Right?
Why not?
Because what's happening is every time you submit a form, you're also updating the step.
Wow, what do you mean? Every time.
Right? So say you submit the form that adds the data for step two, that form submission should just also increment the step. So if there were two fields, it would still just increment by one.
I don't understand. You're going to have to break it down.
Okay, so step two is phone number, right?
Yeah.
So say in addition to phone number, I also wanted country.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right?
Yeah.
So there's a form that gets submitted by Ajax or by post request,
yep.
like regular form submission, either one, right?
Uh-huh.
And that goes and hits a controller.
Yep.
Right? I think that either you should have a hidden input in that form that has step number equals 3.
Okay.
Or you should, in the controller, just say, you know, if I received these two pieces of information, set user step number to 3.
Okay. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So I don't think that you necessarily... Well, and that's the thing. It's like, I don't think you necessarily need to...
Sorry, I was talking about option A, where there is no step count.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. Carry on.
So there is no step count, mm-hmm. and you have to pull request the migration, and you also have to pull request the runtime logic to decide which step you're on.
Correct.
Right? So what happens to all the users that are past that step, but not completed,
right,
and don't have that piece of data? Right now, yes. Now let's say they.
Well, what would ideally happen to them in a perfect world?
They would, I guess, redo the process
from zero.
Yeah,
that's in a perfect world. That's the best user experience.
Okay, so in a perfect world, they go back to that point in time and they have an empty field. Everything else right. is filled out.
That would happen.
Okay, so you'd have to know, how would you know that is now an incomplete, that now that one step in the series of past completed steps is mm-hmm. now incomplete? You would just, well, it would now be calculated as incomplete.
Yeah.
Right. So basically you'd have to have logic on every step that says if, or on every load in the step, if any of them drop the person in at the first incomplete step.
Right.
Ooh. Drop the person in at the first...
Well, you're going to have to do that anyway, right? Because if you're going to have this whole thing where 6 months later I can come sign back up and you're going to send me a deep link, like you're going to be calculating the first incomplete step anyway for your deep linking.
Right. Calculate the first incomplete step. Okay. Okay.
This is pretty good. I like this.
Yeah. So you get in, if the rule is always put the user at the next incomplete, at the earliest incomplete step, always put the user.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you're redirecting the user, you're not mm-hmm. like in the control, you're not explicitly redirecting to the next one. Right. Nah, this is the thing. This is where computed stuff can break down.
No, this is great.
It feels really good, but there's this part of me that's like, there's going to be some weird little edge case and some user's just going to be stuck like repeating the same step over and over because, you know what I'm saying? Because like,
yeah, but like, just don't write a bug. Like, you could write a bug and...
That's the thing, though, is like, computed stuff is prone to bugs.
No, it's no more prone to bugs than the other thing is.
I think it is.
How? What is a bug that you're going to get in computed that you're not going to get in the other one?
Let's say you accidentally introduced criteria for it being flagged as incomplete.
No. But here's the deal, right? Either way, you're basically at some point saying, send them to the earliest incomplete step. Right?
Yeah.
Either way, whether you have the count flag or yes, not. Yes, right?
For sure, yeah.
And so in the computed thing, the way that that could get messed up is that the logic that computes what step you're on breaks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the non-computed one, the way that that could bug out is that the place where you have to update two fields every time you add data breaks.
Yep.
Right? And it's like there's it's equally likely to break. It's just the logic lives in two different places.
It's way
one
more
is a getter
likely.
And one is a setter.
Right, but the setter is one place. The getter is many places. That's the thing. When you're doing the computed thing, you could be relying on tip of the iceberg, you know? You could be relying on a huge pile of like other getters and setters and computed things from other models and things. So like you introduce a new feature down the road when you're developing inside the app, and now you've accidentally changed the way a step is decided as complete or incomplete. You know, that's a possibility.
Where? No, it's not.
Yes, it is. It totally is.
No, the logic for the getter only exists in one place.
Right, it only exists in one place, but what is the logic in that getter? There's dependencies within that logic.
Yeah, it's like, it's a one-liner.
No, it did. I mean, what if it's not a one-liner? In this instance, it's a one-liner, but what if it's not? And even if it is a one-liner, let's say down the road, we go to Socialite, and there's social authentication now, you know?
Right. Uh-huh.
So now the password's not the decider, and you have to remember that. Your tests have to catch that, you know?
Well, your test should never be referencing the password as the decider. They should just be referencing the user is complete.
Definitely. Understood. If we had a perfectly tested app, there would never be any questions of like two approaches, one's more prone to bugs, one's not. If we operated under the assumption that every app is perfectly tested, you know? Like we have to realistically assume a level of stuff can just break, you know?
Yeah, I don't really like this argument.
That's fine.
This argument is basically like, but what if you wrote terrible code? Then your app wouldn't be good.
No, the argument is this is an area of more complexity that has holes in it.
It's way less complexity.
It's a pro-con. You have the pro
it is way less complexity. You know what complexity is? Is when things get out of sync. And that is what you're asking for when you add an extra field. You're asking for things to get out of sync.
What do you mean with option B?
Yeah, with option B, because it's like, what if he fills out the phone number, but whatever, like the thing doesn't get incremented, or like later we add another step, and then we have an off by one error on what step they're on. There's so many ways.
Right. Yeah. The off by one error. Let's say they're not. So far I've actually avoided numbers with steps because of that very. Thing.
Yeah, it's going to be
so I've
disgusting.
Named the steps. They're explicitly named, and sort of I have this looming idea that
right. And
if
so
I
somehow
name
steps
them,
are conscious of what comes before and after them.
Well, yes, yeah, they're conscious
so
of what comes before.
Every step has like a relationship called next step and a relationship called previous step or something.
Yeah, totally.
So now we have a steps table, but
yep. I mean, you don't have to, but yeah.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, unnecessary complexity, but yeah. No, I hate all of this. This all seems like so fragile to me.
Really?
Yeah. Like, why wouldn't you just, you have the data right there. Just say, like, just use the data you already have. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. In this instance, that may be the thing I end up going with, unfortunately. Because, yeah, I feel like there's a better way. I do.
Maybe there's a better way if, like, your whole app is this, right?
Right.
But you have to think about the fact that this is literally just the sign up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is 1% of the interaction with your app. Right?
Right.
And so, like...
The most important part of it, but yeah, its footprint is small. Yeah.
Its footprint is small, and its effect on your code base is huge. If your users now everywhere, like they just have all these extra fields and all these other relationships that exist, it's just like... leave the users alone.
Yeah,
you know, just let the user be a user, because like you have to write a whole another app after you do this sign up, right? Like after the sign up is done, there's an
no.
App
I mean, I could
build.
Store all the that sign up state in a separate table. That's
yeah, but now we're back to having an incomplete users table.
Why?
Because that's the way to do that. If you're gonna store it all in a separate table,
right? What about it?
I don't know. This just all seems like, I don't know.
Okay. All right. So that is fine. You have steps and you define their, you have a some step class that you pass in the user to, and then that step class is basically, you can unit test it and you can basically use that to go to the last unfinished step, and that works, and you don't have to do any crazy things.
I think it works.
And it works.
It should work.
Yeah. So the one issue with that,
uh-huh,
which is not, again, to your point, it's not an issue for like 90% of people, but because sure, we're using SQL Pro as an interface, having the like step numbers and stuff is much easier for somebody to edit than like, you know, invalidating a step by deleting a field that they don't know if it directly correlates to that step, you know?
Yeah, I don't know that it should be easier for them to edit what step someone's on, though.
Yeah, that's probably true, and it's probably
because
true that...
speaking of getting out of sync, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm down. I like it. I like the computedness. I like the last unfinished step. It's the only scenario that I have a clear vision for future changes mid setup wizard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I dig. Yeah. Sweet. Great. Well, thank you.
Can we talk a little bit about your Vim VS Code experience?
Oh, because yeah.
I've been playing with Vim, like vanilla Vim.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I just wanted to get good at Vim. So yeah, my latest Ziggy PR, everything I did in Vim, I've got like Tmux with, you know, Vim in it. And I've done a lot of cool Vimming recently.
Sweet. Nice.
Just because you made fun of me for not knowing Vim, and then I wanted to know.
I didn't make fun of you. Did
you?
I?
Did.
I
yeah,
did?
Well, you didn't make fun of me, but you said, do you not know Vim?
I think it was
felt an insecurity because I was in your Vim and I didn't know Vim.
Yeah, that's on me. That's my
well,
bad.
Well, no, it's also on me for not knowing Vim, and now I kind of know Vim. So I think it was good of you to do that to me. Anyway, so you use Vim mode in things.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Okay, so I'll give the super quick Vim history that is probably very similar to a lot of people, but like I wanted to get into Vim as soon as I heard about it, because you hear that it's like this leet sauce thing to do, and so I got into it.
It's pretty
but,
leet sauce.
Yeah, and I was like, but and everybody says, oh, you just gotta, you know, rip off the Band-Aid, and so I would try to go full Vim, but the configuration for Vim always just tripped me up, like the Vim RCs and all the plugins and Powerline and getting everything right just was always hard for me for some reason. I don't know. It just, I'm sure if I really gave it the old college try now, I could make it like really perfect. But I don't know. At the time it was like, I didn't want to learn a new like macro thing, plugin language for these RC yep. files and these other plugin files and where they're stored. And I don't know. It was just too much for me. And, yep. and so, yeah, so I like would try it. And then I just kind of dropped off that train and would go back to Sublime and moved a lot faster and just would give up. And so I tried them multiple times, and then I switched to Vim mode and Sublime multiple times and did okay. But then I would, because I had the option to use my mouse, I would like forget about Vim mode and just use my mouse mode. and then it would just become an inconvenience for like little things that, oh, you can leave vintage enabled, but then I'm clicking on something and it's like every once in a while I have to hit I to go back into insert mode, which is where I normally was at. So anyway, that's kind of my history. And then one day, I don't know what switched, but I think it was just like there were a couple things that I don't know, that I just wanted to use Vim for. And so I said, like, I'm just going to go hard on Vim mode with VS Code. And that's the first time that I actually committed to doing it. And I've been doing it for, I think, 2 months now. Maybe more. I don't know. Maybe 3 months.
And you switched from one Vim mode plugin to another.
Yeah, right. The first Vim mode plugin I lived with for, I think, a month or more. Maybe 2 months. I didn't switch to AmVim.
And it was bad.
Yeah. So I used it, and it's so bad. Because there is no, I thought it was written by Microsoft, but it's not. It's a user plugin called Vim. It just happens to be the one that's, it's kind of like PHP IntelliSense. Like,
right.
PHP IntelliSense for me with VS Code sucks. And it's the most popular IntelliSense package by a landslide.
You use IntelliFence, right?
But IntelliFence is what's up. And there's way less downloads. And so same thing with this Vim thing. It's like this, it is one of the most popular packages for VS Code, and it sucks. And I think a big part of it might be, some of it's not just
called Vim.
Some of it might be that if you have IntelliSense installed of some sort, like a third party, like IntelliFence, then it might like interact with it in weird ways. But so I tweeted about this misery, and the creator of Vim, tweeted at me and was like, what's wrong with it? And I was like, touche, salesman, you're right. Like, what's wrong with it? I should have my ducks in a row. And I told him I'd get back to him, and I opened a bare like file and just started writing down every time I would hit one of these issues. And there's just so many of them.
Did you send it to him?
No. Because then I would be like, okay, now I got to send this to him. And I'd be like, oh, but there's so many more. Oh, I didn't define that quite well. Or I would experience a weird thing, and then I would just jot down the environment that
would
it kind of happened.
Would you like to read your bear file on the air?
Yeah, I mean, I can read a couple of them, sure. Vim, it's called Vim issues. okay, when highlighting, so if you highlight a full line in Vim, the original Vim plugin, the cursor shows up on the next line, like on the very beginning of the next line.
Uh-huh.
Are you using this Vim plugin in VS Code?
No.
Okay. It shows up on the next line, which is really weird. And if you hit the back button, it doesn't go to like the end of the current line. So that's very annoying. And it just, maybe it's just a visual thing and it doesn't actually impact the way it works. But it always in my head feels like, well, if the cursor's on the beginning of the next line, if I copy this line, I'm copying this line and the line after it, you know?
Oh, no. That's just the new line. That's the same with anything.
What do you mean?
Like Sublime or anything like that.
What?
Like if you need to copy a whole line.
Yeah.
Including the new line.
No, not including the new line. That's what
I want to
do.
Don't want to include the new line. Okay, gotcha.
Right. So if you do Shift V in Vim, it should just highlight the whole line. And then if you hit Y and yank it and then P it somewhere else, that should be fine. But in VS Code, when you hit Shift V, it highlights the whole line and the first sliver character, not the first character, but before just the new line. Right. And so that was extremely frustrating. Mm-hmm. And popovers, if you get a suggestion popover, you can't exit out of it from time to time. Like maybe 50-50 shot. No matter how many times you hit escape, no matter how many new things you type or different lines you go to, it's stuck. You have to literally get your mouse and click on it to get rid of it.
Huh.
Which is extremely frustrating. There's lots of buggy things like that. Like if the way U works in Vim plugin, like, you know, undo U, it's divorced from normal Control Z or Command Z, Command Shift Z.
Oh, what?
So you can detach.
Well,
it
U does work differently, right? Because you can U a Shift U.
What's that?
The history works differently than it does.
Right. Meaning that it's like full commands rather than like every individual action?
No, not that. Like, for example, say like I undo.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
And then I redo by hitting Shift U.
Right.
Right?
I thought it was Control R, but whatever.
Or
probably both.
Is it Control R?
I don't know. Doesn't matter.
I forget. Anyway, whatever, your undo is an action itself.
Interesting.
So you can then undo that action to, like, you can redo and then you can undo your redo. But that's different than, say, it's like the Photoshop style undo, which is what happens in Sublime Text, right? Which is where, like, I do things, and then when I undo them, I go back in history.
Right.
But the forward history still exists.
Right.
Right? And then when I redo things, I go forward back in that history.
Yeah. Okay.
Vim is different.
Okay.
It's basically appending undo methods onto the history and then redo methods after those.
Right. Okay.
So I don't think they could be married.
So this is to say that it preserves the history such that if you undo a bunch of times and then you change a character, you're not effed.
Right.
You can resolve that deeper in the history. That's fancy.
I'm not good enough at Vim to do that, but right. It's cool to know that that's in there.
Yeah, that is cool. But I guess what happened with the Vim mode U was that if you, like, U'd, it might just erase like half the file.
right.
Like something just bugs out and it just goes like, and you're just screwed.
Right.
Other things like random character, like I've just had times where it just explodes, literally. Like, and you're just sitting there like a kid with like cake all over your face.
Right.
That was
I'm a professional programmer.
And I'm staring at my completely effed up screen and I don't know how to get back.
Yeah.
And then I have to close the file. I have to be very careful to not save it. And then close the file and then reopen. I close the file, don't save, and then reopen the file to get back.
Yeah, that's the worst.
So it just sucks. Whatever. There's so many. Occasionally method signature suggestion doesn't disappear. Command D in insert mode is broken. Yeah, you can't use multiple cursors. It says you can, but every time you command, if you highlight a word and then you command D, it puts the character to the end of the line instead of keeping the highlight. It's so dumb. So then you can't select more than two things because now you're not selecting anything. It's so ridiculous. Right. Yeah. There's so many. Yeah.
So you switch to any Vim? Is that what it's called?
It's called AmVim, like AmVim, lowercase
a. AmVim?
Yeah.
How is it?
It's great. At first, I was like, oh, this is so great. It doesn't feel as slow and gross as the other Vim mode. It feels more like they, like the other Vim plugin feels like we're going to recreate Vim in VS Code and we're going to stop at nothing to implement every piece of functionality. And we will hack the crap out of VS Code if we have to.
Right.
This one feels like we're going to take what we're given and we're going to be reasonable about it, you know, and give you pretty much what you need to get there. But you're not going to have every little in and out. The biggest change for me is you can't colon W. So I keep typing colon W.
You could probably build that.
Maybe. I feel like that it would have, maybe, yeah.
Like, probably. You could probably just create that shortcut.
That's possible, but colon takes you to a command thing in VS Code. So it's like, it already has a job. And now you're just like stripped of the W command. I don't know. But yeah, so there's little weird things like that, but as far as traveling up and down and in and out, and it's better, 90% better. It's way more, feels more solid TM. And when you like forward, but there's weird things like I don't know, there's weird things. Just like Vim is better in principle, the Vim plugin, but this one is better in reality.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. What about you?
I like Vim. I like it.
Yeah? What are your thoughts and experiences? Nice. I just rambled on this thing for a long time.
I really like... I really like it. It's just... It's nice. Searching as the way to travel, right?
Okay.
I like having...
Like what searching, like...
Like searching for a character.
Like F forward... search thing, yeah.
Because like I could always do that in Sublime, but because I had a mouse in my hand,
yeah, right.
It was so much easier to just click down to the function or scroll until I found it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
But like just searching as the way to travel is good. And I mean, I was command R-ing and stuff, but like the I don't know, just like the idea that because I can't really scroll and I don't want to hold J for half an hour, like.
Yeah,
just
right.
the limitations force you to like be more intentional about how you move around.
Yes,
which is cool.
Yes, it does.
And so like just things like, you know, like moving to the end of the line with dollar sign or the beginning of the line with caret or zero. You know, just those types of things. Like, I feel I've always loved the Mac because the Mac has modifier keys on the arrow keys, right? Like the command forward and back and alt forward and back and alt shift back, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So like I've been moving around by like the entire line and by word separators.
Yeah.
Like as long as I've been using a Mac.
Right. Yep.
But this just feels like those like built-in Mac controls that I love, like cranked up with even more power. Right. And I know that there's like unlimited learning that I can do. And like the whole like that you can just append a number on the front of any movement command and it like doubles or triples it.
Yeah, that is dope. Yeah.
It's insane. It's crazy good.
Yeah.
So
that,
yeah.
I underutilize that. I do a lot of like 5J-ing and like shift V 3J, stuff like that, but I don't do enough like 2F comma or like 2W, because then it's like, what am I going to do? Am I going to like count the number of characters until the one I want to get to know that number, you know? So I end up just like,
I feel like there's things you could memorize though. Like this is what I've been thinking. It's like, oh, you know what I'm going to eventually memorize is how many words it is from like public function name to the first argument.
Public function name to the first
argument. Right, like that's basically like a 3W.
Oh, okay, interesting.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so like, I feel like that's all going to become muscle memory.
Huh.
You know what I'm saying? Like getting from the beginning of a line to the first argument.
Interesting. Yeah, that's cool. I wonder, there's always that level of mastery ahead of you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's like, I feel like I could get to a point where, like, I just completely controlled, you know, like, I'm very slow.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and I want to be faster, but, like, I'm being very intentional about, like, not getting to something the fastest way that I could, which would usually just be, like, holding J, but, like, actually, like, thinking about it and, like, doing something with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that the thing for me right now is the ruts. Like, I'm at a level of proficiency that I don't think... I think I'm comparable to me with a mouse. I don't really know. In some ways, I'm sure I'm faster, but it's not like a speed issue right now at all. But I get in these ruts where like I don't explore new commands and I forget about all the fancy ones. And then I end up just using like this basic toolbox of like W's and E's and V's and Y's and yanking and peeing and stuff like that. Like just a really basic stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And then forgetting about, some of the more...
But, like, if you're really good with those things, like, I would just add one thing to your life.
Right, that's the thing. But you have to remember to do that. You have to, like... Which is always exciting and fun, like, if you have
spare
time.
Sticky note that, bro.
Yeah, I open up... I Google Images Vim cheat sheet, and you get that, like, basic one. And I just scan through it, and I go, ooh, that's fun. The current one is, like, you know how zero goes to the beginning of line?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I always use to go to the beginning. But if you do shift hyphen... No, so, like, underscore... Mm-hmm. Underscore takes you to the first character of the line, which is much more useful.
So does caret.
Does it?
Yeah.
Cool. Then that.
Because you can think about it. It's like in regular expressions, right? Like caret, whatever means like starts with, and dollar sign, whatever means ends with.
Right. I thought character just went to the beginning of the line. Or caret. Yeah. Cool. All
right. Let me check. iTerm. All right, here we... Oh, I have Vim open. Look at this.
Okay, so caret... Let's see what my caret does. Yep, perfect. And then
does it?
Shift underscore. Yep, they both do the same thing. Seemingly, yeah. Sweet.
Yeah, caret was just easier for me to remember because it reminded me of regex.
Yeah, it's probably even easier to get to for me.
I'm really excited for this new keyboard to come, dude. I bought... I kickstarted this keyboard... And they moved all of the modifier keys into the middle of the split.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm very excited.
Looks sweet.
Because my pinkies hurt using Vim.
Yeah. Why do they hurt using Vim? Because you don't...
Like, reaching for things.
Caps lock,
on the corners.
Though. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
no, yeah. I did do the caps lock thing. The caps lock thing is nice, but that's still a pinky reach.
Yeah. And I also, I saw your tweet. I didn't want to publicly reprimand you, but I really think you should use command for caps lock.
Can you talk me through it?
Yeah. So, I mean, because it impacts your whole Mac, you know? It's like control is only super useful in Vim. And the only things that I, what do I use control for in Vim? Control R, and that's about it. I use, on the command line, I use control more, like control U to clear the command line.
Sure.
But I really don't use Vim control that much.
In tmux also, and I use control A as my tmux binding.
For what?
In tmux.
What is tmux?
Tmux is like a terminal session manager.
Okay.
Or something. Oh, I got you. Okay. It lets me like have multiple terminals open in the same terminal window and switch between them and
stuff. Yeah.
And so tmux has an action key. So basically by default it's control B, which is terrible.
Okay.
But by setting caps lock to control and setting it to control A, it's like right next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I just hit control A and then like control A quote is like split the pane horizontally.
Okay. Yeah.
And then like control A, and so then I also now I have control HJKL, so like the Vim navigation keys. If I'm holding control when I do them, in addition to navigating between Vim panes, it also navigates between tmux panes.
Gotcha.
So it's pretty cool.
Huh.
So I like having control there because like I feel in control.
There you go. Yeah, I think you'll get more mileage out of it if it's command. But if you're getting mileage out of it and your wrists don't hurt, I mean that's what matters. My forearm would just kill me because of my thumb hitting that command. But
Well, that's the thing. What I feel like this whole thing is making me live more on the home road than I was before. Anyway.
Okay.
My hand position might change anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Because I kind of tilted my hands out a little bit.
I gotcha.
So we'll see.
Two quick things while we're going and going. When I got started in Vim mode, the biggest hurdle for me was HJKL, and you said that wasn't.
Nah, I mean if you just don't.
That was like an issue for me. That was like the mental mapping for that just wasn't there. It didn't map, you know, because the vertical and horizontal spatial mapping is just different. It's not intuitive, so it's you have to force yourself to map it, and that was a huge hurdle for me. I had to play that Vim game, you know that. Have you seen
Vim
that
golf or whatever?
No, there's a game for like it's almost like I don't know. It almost looks like a Pokemon game, and to move your character around, you have to use those keys, and so it quickly like gets
that's
you.
Cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Yeah, yeah, and it teaches you Vim in the process. Like to get over the water, you have to like. You know, get to the end of the line to, like, you know, so that was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't had a super difficult time with it.
That's great.
The H and L just makes sense, right? And so it's really just the J and K you need to remember.
Yeah. Right. Yep. I still mess up H or J and K sometimes.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing I wanted to say that I am back to loving VS Code. I'm back to loving
good.
It. I almost made good Vim. Yeah, I almost made a channel in Slack, and I might do it, called Convince Me to Use VS Code, where everybody who doesn't use VS Code, just I invite them, and then I just shove amazing things down their throat.
You should make that channel.
Yeah, I think I'm going to, because there's so many little instances, and it's just getting better and better.
Because worst case scenario, I'll just learn things as you're forcing people to do them.
Yeah, I need to get Keith. Keith is my target.
Does he use PHP Stormers?
He uses Sublime.
Okay.
Like, the PHP Stormers, I don't think I'm going to win them.
Yeah, no, you can't win
them. But the Sublimers, like, I think I could win him easily. I do.
Why don't you make that a project that you do?
What's that?
I think you should do that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do it. Yep.
This is good.
Yeah. So, really good conversation. What were you saying?
Yeah, long podcast.
Long podcast. Yep. Couple little tangents here and there, but I think we hashed out like a good solution to a problem that actually helped me, and I'm actually gonna do it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was fun. I enjoyed that.
I liked that.
Cool. I liked that.
but we didn't end cracking up, so must not be
no,
that good.
We didn't, but we got very serious. There was a moment there where I felt very defensive of my idea.
Yeah, there's been a couple of those moments on the podcast where, like, either me or you, where it gets to this point where, like, we're just hashing it out on this level, and then there's just this moment where it's just, like, silence, and we're both like...
Like, what are we yelling at each other about? I have a purple desktop background right now.
Nice.
Bright purple. It's pretty cool.
I think I, too, have a purple one, but it's just the Mac, like... It is purple. It's like mountains or something.
Hang on, I'll allow me. Boom. See this?
I like it.
And a big shout out to Jared White for providing this music.